Hello and welcome back, everyone, to The Dawn of Man. This is a podcast hosted by myself, Victor Murillo, a undergraduate student, all the way live from and attending California State University, Dominguez Hills. This podcast is an opportunity for me to share interesting stories, facts, and events during specific eras of world history. In our first dozen of episodes, I will be sharing stories, facts, and events of both World War I and World War II. My goal is to present to you stories that are not looked at enough and why these events matter. I recently took a class about both world wars, and I thought that I knew a lot about them, but it turns out I really didn't. Personally, I never focus on the small details, and to my surprise, I found out a lot that stuck with me, and that's something that is interest to many. What better way to start off this podcast than to talk about these series of events that come from both world wars that changed not just one nation's history, but that impacted multiple. Today, I'm going to be diving into the story of the 369th Regiment of the United States Army that served in World War I, better known as the Harlem Hellfighters. A group of heroic African-American soldiers, all from Harlem, New York, fighting the enemy in Europe. They have bravery, respect, and awards that they have earned, but I want to give them the spotlight that they deserve. Before the Harlem Hellfighters were formed in 1917 and sent out to be part of the war in Europe and serving in the battlefield, there was the original formation of the group that was founded in 1913. In 1913, before they got their famous name, they were just a group that was made by the federal government alongside other African-American groups with the goal in mind to bring African-American men in duty and to convince them to feel a contribution towards their communities and their country for the war. They were first known as the 15th New York Regiment. Initially, they were a National Guard unit that was part of the National Defense and Security. The group consisted all of volunteers that came from mostly Harlem, but others from different parts of New York City. Well, for specific names, we have both Private Henry Johnson and Needham Roberts, who we will get to more later, as well as others. The group, during its first few years as a National Guard unit, found itself with no leadership positions, as they would still be led by white officers. This is just one of many examples that you could find out about the segregation in the U.S. military, even during the war. And something that we will also get into later, with how they were treated in Europe when they arrived compared to how they were treated in the United States. In 1916, for the group's first notable assignments, they would serve in the Mexican Border Service that would consist of multiple kinds of activities such as border patrolling to look out for threats such as raids because of the brown scare going around throughout the southwest of the United States during this time. Due to the latest scare of Pancho Villa raiding Columbus, New Mexico for supplies for his effort in the revolution that was going on in Mexico at the time. But they would also participate in things like construction or infrastructure work or building roads around the border and even fortifications. In general, most of the tasks and activities that they would end up doing at this time would help serve as experience and knowledge that they would further insert into what they would face in the war when they would spend their time in Europe. They had major success as border security and had no serious combat interactions at all. Come the famous day of April the 6th of 1917, when President Woodrow Wilson would ask Congress to enter the war, Congress would approve of his message as they would vote and declare war on Germany to be officially be part of World War I. Since the declaration of the war from the United States on March 1st, 1918, the 369th Regiment would now be born. They would now be officially be part of the United States Army, but unfortunately, they weren't even able to fight alongside them due to the segregation that was being pushed in the military, as well as through possible ethnic tensions that could have caused issues within the military. It really was disappointing to see this going around. The military that is supposed to be united and choosing actions to support the bigger picture or goal, I should say, that is just end the war that is going on in Europe. I mean, even in this case, really, it's just silly how things like segregation get involved. I mean, like, for the love of God, you guys are on the same team. Again, this is just going to be one of the many moments I'm going to be pointing out dumb situations in history that just make my brain want to explode. And not like the cool mind-blowing emoji kind of way, but more like the what the fuck kind of way. So with the Harlem Hellfighters not being able to fight with the United States military, but being part of the United States Army, you may be thinking, well, when did they fight or who did they fight? As we know, the United States before entering the war was still heavily involved in it. They mainly were in full support of the Allies with France and Britain, as they would send them assistance via money, cargo, and ammunition, which is what I talked about in my previous episode of the Lusitania. You guys should go listen to it if you guys haven't. But now entering the war, the United States not only were in full support of the Allies and were an ally to fight next to them, But with issues like segregation, how to work with African-American soldiers and white soldiers, the 369th Regiment would be part of the French Army through the orders of General John J. Pershing, who will let them be part of the front lines in combat. In this case, it's a win on every side of the situation. On the United States side, they get to go through with their segregation preferences. Pretty lame, if you say so. The Hellfighters, though, get to be part of the war, and the French, who constantly need assistance and are down bad for any kind of help no matter what, they get the call from John J. Pershing saying, hey, I'm gonna send some boys on your way. And you know, they're over here kicking their feet on their beds when they hear this news, because they could get any, they want the help, they need the help. So it's a good thing that the Harlem Hellfighters are obviously now in the war, because as someone who volunteers to be part of something, you would hope to get the most out of what you signed up for. But for African-American soldiers at this time, they never got the chance to shine or be part of the heroic situations of war. Segregation had them doing all the dirty labor work on the side and hardly being part of any kind of combat. Sure, they were trained with basic knowledge, but they never got experience. Just like I mentioned before, even when these guys were border security in Mexico, they didn't get into any combat. I asked myself, well, why did they not want African Americans alongside them in combat? At the end of the day, they can help. But through common thought and assumption of segregation, there was a belief and an agenda being pushed out. The African American soldiers just couldn't perform and were useless for the war. Which, one, is obviously wrong, but two, very hypocritical and falsely advertised from what the military and the federal government was trying to do in the first place when forming these African-American units. As mentioned before, the whole reason why groups like the Harlem Hellfighters were even made were just to be part of the National Guard unit, or to be part of the National Guard unit, is because they wanted African-American men to feel like they can contribute to the war and represent their country. Now, you may say, yeah, but when they were part of the Guard, they just wanted them to do their labor work, and that's what they meant by serving their country, and that's what they signed up for. So, yeah, I say sure. In the overall grand scheme of things for the war effort in the United States, someone has to do those things, and they were helping in that way as the rest of the military was overseas and fighting, for sure. Yeah. But it's just wrong when it's plain out segregation. It doesn't just have to be one certain group doing that. And these men want to go to war and help their country in the front lines. So with them adopted by the French army, how exactly were they treated? Well, they treated them amazing. They considered them as equals and part of the team and treated them as brothers. The French would even give them their own French army uniforms for them to wear, and this alone is more than what the United States could supply them with. They treated them with respect and trained them as well as they could, and they would supply them with their own weapons ready for battle, like the Berthier rifle, or that was common in French arsenal, or they would also give them the Adrian helmet for protection. The French were also responsible for one of the major awards that the Hellfighters would end up collecting, and that is something I'm going to get into in a bit. Alright, that's cool and all for sure. I'm sure that I've talked enough about their context and how they got to Europe and through heavy segregation in the military, but now it's time to talk about the cool stuff and what they did in action on the battlefield. The Hellfighters joined the French in trench warfare battles in 1918 and were in their front lines at last, being right there and in the face of war, all the way from New York City. Things immediately kicked off bloody in their trip to Europe, as the Hellfighters would confront their first major battle in war, as well as their most notable one. On May 14, 1918, both Private Henry Johnson and Needham Roberts were on night patrol in an observation post. During night duty around 2 a.m., things went from 0 to 100 ASAP, no Rocky. Both soldiers would grow suspicious of noises that they were hearing, which was barbed wire that was around them being cut. Both soldiers then quickly spotted about 25 German army soldiers approaching their position. It was a 2v25. It was a nightmare situation that was at hand. Both Johnson and Roberts would kick in their fighting instincts and protect themselves as much as they could. They would fight the Germans off at distance in the trench that they were in on guard duty. They would start firing with their rifles and even chuck grenades in hopes that it would blast them away. Things would only get worse as Roberts would start getting injured and Johnson's rifle would be jammed due to him putting the wrong ammunition in his rifle. But running or accepting death was not an option, and they were still more than determined to come out of this battle alive. Even with no arsenal, they would engage in melee and hand-to-hand combat with the Germans, using the back end of their rifles, banging on the German soldiers to go down. Johnson would even also resort to him just using a bolo knife, fighting on and protecting the injured robbers that was at risk of being taken away as prisoner, fighting off even more Germans. Afterwards, French reinforcements would now arrive on the scene to help the injured man alongside their arrival. The Germans would also start retreating. Both soldiers were down and out for the count. Johnson suffered 21 injuries, but managed to wound 10 plus soldiers as well as kill off four. The soldiers would later be attended to medically after they would be rescued at the arrival of the French. Soon after, the brave soldiers would be presented with one of the most notable awards in World War I history, as both soldiers would be first Americans to receive the Croix de Guerre, an award from the French. It is known to be awarded to those who are valiant in action, and is just one of the many awards that this group would collect, but it's definitely my favorite and their most notable. I mean, it's just so badass from them. You got a whole situation where it's just a 2v25. A 2v25 in itself is crazy. This is tough. I mean, you just have so much going on. You have grenades flying from both sides, and then the battle gets to the point where it's just hand-to-hand combat. It's crazy, man. Another major battle that they would go on and be a part of was going to be the Meuse-Argonne Offensive. The Meuse-Argonne Offensive was going to be the deadliest battle that they would face, as this operation would be the biggest military operation of World War I. That would be led by the United States. And the Harlem Hellfighters would be in the front lines. On September 26th, hey, my birthday, 1918, the Allied forces decided to push German lines in an attempt to get closer to the Hindenburg Line on the Western Front. In doing this, they targeted the Meuse River Valley, a town near the Argonne Forest on the northeastern side of France. The Allied forces were mostly led by the AEF, a military force under the command of John J. Pershing, as well as French and British units, as well as the Harlem Hellfighters, who were on the risky side of this fight. Worried about chemical warfare, they were very much capable of being exposed to it. Not only that, but they were also in the front lines against a very heavy 4-5 German unit that would have a bittersweet ending. In the capture of Sechel, a small town in the Meuse-Argonne Offensive, they managed in one day to take down the Germans, cutting down the 700 that were operating there to about only 150. But through this fight and through more heavy warfare through the operation, the Hellfighters would suffer. About 1,000 of them would be wounded alongside 144 that would be dead. Half of the regiment was not fit to fight at this point, and another operation that would consist of them capturing a railroad junction on September 30, they would suffer even more casualties. After these operations, together with the fact that they were short on men at this point, they would no longer be on the front lines of the battlefield any longer from this point on. In October, they were going on to fight with the Allies, pushing the Germans further back as they were falling back anyway and retreating. Soon enough, on November 17, 1918, they were the first Allied unit to reach the Rhine River after the war would end. In total, the Hellfighters spent 191 days on combat duty in Europe. When leaving Europe, on their way back home to New York, the Harlem Hellfighters were received as heroes, like most military. Everyone was just happy that the war was over and there was no room for war. For now, anyway. On February 17, 1919, the regiment had a parade that had them march from 5th Street up to Harlem in recognition of their honor. This parade that was held was even published and talked about on the New York Times just a few days after, on February 23, 1919. A lot of people were iffy about their feelings towards the 369th Regiment. They were a bit confused whether to acknowledge them and what they did, or to still be blinded by segregation. The French also not only gave Johnson the Robbers a Croix de Guerre award, but would end up giving it to the whole regiment soon after. But life back in the United States was not so easy after the war. Like most soldiers in America coming back home, it was hard getting into society and having a normal life. It was hard for many veterans to find jobs, education, and housing. Jobs were hard to find enough for veterans due to it being limited, but it was even harder for African-American soldiers due to racism and discrimination. Around this time, obviously, with segregation being active, you could put one and one together and find out that America didn't treat African-Americans very well. There was discrimination everywhere from jobs, housing, and education, and it didn't help around this time. The economy was starting to go down and would lead to the Depression in the 30s. Despite their service and as veterans, they still wouldn't get any access to benefits, like white veterans either. But it was just very sad to see. It wasn't all bad for Harlem Hellfighters when going back home. I mean, believe it or not, the Harlem Hellfighters did a lot during the war than just fighting. They had their own jazz band that was composed by Lieutenant James Reese of the regiment, and they played a lot in Europe, introducing the genre to Europeans. Going back home, they would still perform a lot in New York, and come to my surprise, when I was researching more about what they did in music, I found out that they have most of their music still on Spotify. And you could still find their music under the Hellfighters Band or James Reese Europe on Spotify. And I'm actually playing some of their music right now on the background. I find it very interesting how they were a big influence in music as well, and it made me take interest into their story even more. Jazz is such a captivating genre that attracts many who love music and its history, so to learn and find out more about it is always so cool to see. But my favorite thing about them being involved in music is the fact that they introduced a new genre to Europe. Obviously, throughout time and communication technology advancements, it gets easier to know things from all parts of the world through different sources of information. But to see that these guys went to a whole new part of the world and just introduced jazz to a new audience in person with a live performance is straight up awesome. Music, and specifically jazz around this time in the 20s, coming home from the war, jazz gave room for many African Americans like the Harlem Hellfighters, who were musicians, to challenge a lot of racial stereotypes that were going around in the United States, proving that African Americans were talented, and they made sure that that was known, with so many audiences tuning into their music that they were putting out. And of course, we're talking about the Harlem Hellfighters, we're also going to be talking about the Harlem Renaissance. Everything I talked about with their parade and music was very big in their own home. Harlem was proud and took pride and gratitude to have such a group of fighters do what they did in the war. Big influencers throughout the Harlem Renaissance like Langston Hughes and Marcus Garvey were inspired and often recognized as African-American soldiers and what they did during the war. A big part of Marcus Garvey's campaign with the Universal Negro Improvement Association that he founded was to prove to the side of the world that turned its back away from the African-American grayness that whatever a white person could do, African-Americans could do the same. I bring this up because that's exactly what the Harlem Hellfighters did. They came into the war against many odds, being pushed to the side doing labor work efforts to proving their grayness on the battlefield. Even through deadly circumstances like the front lines or the heroic story of Henry Johnson and Needham Roberts, or through dangerous operations like the Meuse-Argonne Offensive, they still continue to show that they are more than capable than what was expected out of them. The reason I chose to talk about these famous war heroes was not just to talk about what they did in their time of war. The Harlem Hellfighters are not talked about enough in general as it is anyway, sadly. But me personally, I never knew about this group that much at all until a couple months ago when I started to research about World War I. I even asked a few of my friends when I was thinking of making this episode if they ever heard about them, and two of them said no, and one of them said yes, I do know them. They were in one of the Battlefield video games. And even for people who do somewhat know about them, they mainly will just know the story of Privates Henry Johnson and Needham Roberts, because it's just a popular World War I story. And yes, I agree, it is rightfully their most known tale, but these guys had a lot more to their journey to tell than, and they had a lot that was going on for them that people should know about when you think about the Harlem Hellfighters. Not that I'm trying to say that they shouldn't be known for what they did in the war. Of course they should. I mean, I still believe that they will forever be known as war heroes because, I mean, that's what they are. They are war heroes. And that is what I focus on when talking about these guys. But I am also very glad that I have this platform to talk about the other way that they impacted and built their legacy on. I feel like most people don't end up knowing more about the Harlem Hellfighters or taking interest in learning about them. I took African American history class in community college that was mainly focused on the 20th century, and I never heard about these guys at all. When talking about the 1910s to 30s, I mainly just learned about the Great Depression, but I'm very happy that I got to learn more about their legacy and everything that they were involved in. What they became was so inspiring, and I mean, these guys volunteered to participate in the war and prove a point to the federal government that they were wrong about African American men and what they can or can't do. They had these guys kicked to the sidelines doing labor work at first, but once they got to the front lines of the war, they didn't complain as they looked death in the eyes and stood their ground. They proved that they were efficient and could do anything on the battlefield, even when their own country didn't want to fight alongside them. They impacted their culture in a huge way and in a positive way, bringing jazz music to the spotlight in different parts of the world, as well as embracing it back home and inspiring other artists in the Harlem Renaissance, further proving the point that African Americans are talented enough and capable enough to do anything. The Harlem Hellfighters are more than decorated enough to prove their worth, with the whole regiment receiving the highest honor award of Croix de Guerre from the French Army. And in 2015, Henry Johnson will receive a Medal of Honor from President Barack Obama from his heroics in World War I. Also, fun facts. The way that they got their name, Harlem Hellfighters, or the Hellfighters, was because the Germans actually gave them that name. They called them Hohenkämpfer. I hope that this episode, I was able to give listeners a new piece of context to World War I history and an interesting tale of World War I, adding to your timeline of history. I appreciate everyone lending their ears to listen to this episode and giving me the opportunity to tell you something I find interesting. I'd also appreciate everyone following the podcast on Instagram, the Dawn of Man podcast, and recommending a friend to listen. Other than that, thank you, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Could you imagine yourself alongside 1 million plus men confident and ready to go into one of the biggest battles in World War I, but soon after you are surrounded by German enemies with little to no chance of survival? This is the eerie tale of the 77th Battalion that was lost. Listen next time to hear more than the amount of lives that was cost. And thank you, KDHR, for letting me record this episode at the radio station in Dominguez Hills. All research credit goes to Smithsonian Magazine, Symbol History, and Library of Congress blogs for my research material on this episode.